Hi, good morning or good afternoon. I'm Isabella and I'm here with Emily, who is a voice actor. Hi.
Hi, everybody. Hi. Nice to meet you, Isabella.
I'm here for an interview where I'm going to ask her about her job and how she lives her day-to-day life, you know, what inspired her and everything else. Before we begin, I want to give a big shout out to the club, Melbourne Minutes, who is allowing us to make all of this happen. And I recommend you that after you're done listening to this, to check out all of our other episodes. Okay, so we're going to start with the basics. I was wondering, what inspired you to become a voice actor?
As a Millburn High School graduate and a former math student of Dr. Myron's, he can tell you that I was a young actor. I started my professional career at the age of 10, working at our world-renowned paper mill playhouse. I then from there went on to do film, TV, movies, and of course, voiceovers. Part of voiceover includes commercials, audiobooks, animation, promos, it goes on and on. And I wouldn't say that I was inspired to do it because I really didn't know what a voiceover was when I started working in voiceover. I had an agent who would send me out on auditions. And one day they said, okay, you're going to go and audition for a voiceover. And it was for Vicks Cough Medicine. I didn't even really know what a voiceover was. And I booked the first job that I auditioned for. And, you know, in the famous words of Elle Woods, what, like it's hard? But it is. And I actually had the privilege to learn on the job. And I got to learn about voiceover before I had to worry about paying my bills. And so now what I love about voiceover is, oh gosh, there's so much I love about it. But I love storytelling and I love being creative and imaginative. All of the things that I love about acting, I really love about voice acting as well. And I feel very, very fortunate to be a voice actor.
I'm glad. Is voice acting like specifically something you always knew you wanted to do? Or like when you tried out that first job, was something that you said, oh, I like this?
I really love voiceovers. And as my career grew and progressed, I felt very satisfied in so many parts of my career. I loved theater. I loved being in films and TV shows. But there really was something about voiceover that just was so appealing to me. One of the shows I've been on that your audience might know is Pokemon. I've been on Pokemon now for 19 years. One of the characters that I play on Pokemon is a 10-year-old. That means I've played a 10-year-old for 19 years. What's appealing about voiceover is that it doesn't matter so much what I look like as long as I am able to bring that character to life. I also really specialize in the audiobooks that I do in young adult YA fiction or young readers. And I do all sorts of, you know, books. One of my favorite series that I've ever narrated, which was truly one of the gifts of a lifetime, was The Babysitter's Club. And I am the voice of Marianne in all of her books for The Babysitter's Club. Again, she's a teenager, and voice acting allows me to tell stories at any age and stage. And so there's a lot of longevity to that, as well as creativity. I also want to point out that I have a home recording studio. I've had one for almost 20 years. I used to be the network announcer for MTV, which is kind of like when you hear like the, hey, coming up next on MTV, an all new episode of Road Rules, you know, like whatever show they would have. And I was doing those so often. And I had a toddler and a baby on the way. And they were like, hey, maybe you just want to like record from home sometimes. Maybe it's easier. And I was like, yeah, I do. And I built this incredible recording studio. Now, in the past 5 years since COVID, everybody has some sort of recording set up at home and it's very accessible. And in terms of kind of jumping on that bandwagon, to have the flexibility to work from home and wear pajama pants is really a bonus. Although I really love going in and working with people in person, just as much as I love the flexibility to sometimes work in my own space. So all of those are really what make voiceover and so much more something that I'm just so passionate about.
That's very cool. And you just named a lot of characters and a lot of jobs that you've been doing. So how do you manage to develop a unique voice for each character?
That's a great question. A lot of people will ask me how to get into voiceovers. And the first thing that I'll ask them is if they've ever taken an acting class. So voice acting is always acting first. And part of the way that I keep all of my characters straight or develop a voice for a character, and I'll talk specifically for animation, is really thinking about what personality traits and characteristics that character possesses. Just thinking about somebody as a 15-year-old or an adult is not going to give you the specifics you need, right? So I pull out all of the superlatives and adjectives that I can use to describe a person. Are they anxious? Are they impatient? What's their background? And all of those clues are going to help me to develop what my character sounds like.
That's very cool, actually. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you had any creative freedom during the filming process, like if the director gave you like a bunch of lines and you like made up one in the process, or you know.
So let's talk about two different types of animation. The first type of animation is called pre-lay. Pre meaning before, lay meaning, well, in this case, when they draw or animate it. When you're doing pre-lay, you have a lot of freedom in how you want to say a line, how you want your character to react. Oftentimes, you're with a director, you'll do a couple takes of each line for an animated series, and you'll go on and do a few takes of each line. And there is definitely a lot of freedom and flexibility, whether it's to add or change in that moment. Now, the other type of animation is called ADR, and that actually stands for automated dialogue replacement. And those are shows like anime where the cartoon is already drawn and you're very limited in what you can do or say because of the very technical mouth flaps that are already drawn. So in that case, I have to be very specific. And you guys can't see this, but Isabella can see me kind of making like a little puppet with my mouth and I, as I talk to you, and matching that puppet flap with the tone of my voice. And so every mouth flap is very specific. And so we have to be very much locked in to meet and match that flap. And so you don't have as much flexibility with that. There are times that a line is written a certain way in a cartoon. And if we change it or I change it and I make a suggestion and it fits better, I always joke and I'll yell out in the booth, producer credit, writer credit, director credit. I don't get any of those. But there is definitely some creative freedom that we can take for sure.
Which of the two types do you like the best of the both you just mentioned?
I don't have a preference. And because of the different types of shows that I work on, they just stretch different creative muscles.
Now that you were just talking about your job, like the different ways you change your voice, I was wondering, what was your first voice acting job?
My very first voice acting job was that Vicks commercial that I did. Now that I'm thinking of it, I think it was Halls. So it was some sort of cough or sick. I had to be like, oh, I'm really sick. I don't remember. That was the very first, and that was a commercial voiceover. The very first animated job I did was for a series for MTV called Celebrity Deathmatch. This, you can actually find this, I think, up online on YouTube. Somebody has probably protected it like the gem it is. Celebrity Deathmatch is a claymation animation where you would have two celebrities fighting in the most gruesome ways in a boxing ring. This was on MTV. They used to do a lot of original content. And it was filthy and fun and very pop culture niche. So the very first job that I did for animation was a fight between Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. And I played Christina Aguilera in that. And I believe I got scalped.
That is so interesting.
In the cartoon. Very funny. They in the middle of recording and we're like, oh, ah, you know, we're fighting and beating each other up. And again, it's all voice. There were no actors hurt in the making of this. They were like, all right, Emily, we're going to bring you in some water. And I was like, oh, great. Thanks. Yeah, I could use a little water. They're like, no, we'd like you to choke on it. So it was a lot of fun. And then the very first anime job that I did was actually one of Miyazaki's films. And if you know anything, oh, yeah. So you can understand it was a really special opportunity to have that as my first foray into anime. And at the time, Disney Studios had just purchased the rights and they were the ones dubbing. So the first anime job I did was Nausicaä, Valley of the Wind. And we got to film that at Walt Disney Studios on Goofy Way on one of their big, big sound stages. And that was a really special experience for me.
That's amazing. You've mentioned that you've done MTV, you've done the celebrity thing, you did Hayao Miyazaki. What has been your favorite acting job so far?
I really loved performing the Babysitter's Club books. To me, because I was such a huge fan of the Babysitter's Club growing up and of Anne M. Martin, I really felt like that was just life goals for me. A lot of the jobs that I really love are things that are deeply personal. They're not necessarily the things that have made me the most money or have had the most prestige, but they really do carry personal meaning to me. So the Babysitter's Club was very, very special. Another audiobook that I was a part of was the full cast of Little Women with Laura Dern, and I played Beth in that. Thank you. As you can tell, I actually really love books and I love to read and I love storytelling. So whether that is voiceover or audiobooks, you know, like cartoons, commercials, I love connecting that way. And so those two audiobooks really stand out to me as things personally that I'm very proud to have been a part of that carry a special place in my heart. I have two kids, and I think a lot about the legacy that I leave behind, not only for our world and, like, you know, ethically, but for them. And knowing that there are recordings out there of me for decades that they can enjoy and their kids can enjoy, makes me really happy.
That's really cool. That's really amazing, honestly.
Although now you're asking about it, and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, being part of the Pokemon franchise and the Yu-Gi-Oh franchise has opened up so many exciting opportunities for me. I just got back from a convention, a Comic-Con, a few hours ago. I just love connecting with people, and the multi-generational fandom on that is also really exciting and special to me. I honestly could go on and on. I feel like being asked to choose between my children, like, what do you love the most? I don't know.
There's so many Pokemon fans in this school. It's amazing. So I'm sure they'll love hearing about this.
I don't know when this is going to be released, but I do have an appearance not too far from the school in May. And I think it's the closest that I'm going to be to our hometown. So hope to see everybody there.
I agree. Again, I said before, you've done so much stuff. What do you feel like it's the trickiest acting job you've done?
The trickiest acting job that I have done. That's a really good question. Looking back on my career, which really extends decades, it's a really difficult question to answer what's been the trickiest. I think there have been challenges in my career, but I've never felt that there's anything that was very tricky or nothing that I couldn't handle or that was insurmountable. For anybody out there who's interested in acting or stage, I've toured, which means that you're in a different city every week. I've toured in Europe, and that can be tricky because it can be very isolating being away from friends and family. It's also incredibly rewarding, but I'd say that trying to make sure that I took care of myself while I was traveling and made sure I wasn't lonely and that I really became friends with myself. It's where I learned that there is something really great about going to see touristy things on your own and learning how to say no if somebody invites you to dinner. Because you remember, you like live, sleep, eat, work, breathe the same air as your cast for 6 months, 9 months, a year. And so learning how to be comfortable being alone was something that I found tricky, but had to learn how to do. And in terms of like specifically like a job that was very tricky, I've never felt like anything was, ooh, so tricky that I couldn't do it in my life, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. You've mentioned so many, like the touring and like the MTV and the Pokemon. Do you have any fun anecdotes from your career?
Well, in terms of anecdotes, I know that I told you about Celebrity Deathmatch and they handed water and asked me to choke on it. I always like that. But I don't necessarily have any anecdotes specifically, but I will give you a couple of lessons that I've learned along the way that I think are very helpful to me. Something is something that I just want to point out is that I've been a voiceover actor for like almost 30 years, which is crazy because like I'm only 25, you guys. No, I've been doing it since I was a kid, and I now have kids older than I was when I started voice acting. And my daughter, who's also a voice actress, sometimes we audition for the same parts. Like if you're a good actor, but that's the thing, right? Like there's a lot of competition in this industry, and it only grows more and more as people are like, oh, what? Like it's hard. I'll just speak in front of a microphone. Well, it's not that. And with the market becoming very saturated, everybody's got a home studio. Everybody wants to audition. And now with the real advancements of AI, making sure that my voice is protected is a really big part of what I do. I've stopped working on some companies that wouldn't offer me protection and wanted to reserve the right to manipulate and use my voice to, you know, use it forever in perpetuity, which is something that I won't allow because I like what I do and I'd like to have a job for a very long time. But a couple of things, you audition a lot. And you audition into a void, and maybe you're one of five people for a role, but most likely you're one of 500 or even 5,000 voices sometimes for one part. So there's two things. One, you have to be your biggest fan and your harshest critic in this industry. And what I mean by that is you have to believe in yourself, and you also have to be really hard on yourself. You have to be really good about time management. You have to be really good about making sure that you're doing everything that is in your power and doing it the best of your ability so that you can leave everything that's out of your power and out of your control to everyone else. It's kind of like applying to colleges, right? Like you cannot control the other schools or what anybody else gets on their SATs or on their grades. You can only control how you work. So that's number one. You have to be your biggest fan and your harshest critic. And the other thing I will say is that when I audition, I am not auditioning to get a job. I go in there to do my job. My job is auditioning. My job is making sure that I send in the best audition. That's the show. That's the final performance. That's the record. So if you have one shot, do your job. And that is a paraphrase from Bryan Cranston, who is one of my all-time favorite actors. You'll know him from Breaking Bad, Malcolm in the Middle. There is nothing that man can't do, but he says you are not going in there to get a job. You go in there to do your job. And every day I go in and I do my job.
I really like this. I think everyone of our like audience who's interested in any form of acting really or any job at all will really appreciate your advice.
Thank you. I'll say one other thing on that, because I do know that we have a lot of students at Millburn who are so creative and so smart and so talented. You don't become an actor if you just kind of sort of want to do it. There is too much rejection, there is too much sacrifice, and there is too much work to not have your entire heart and soul bleed wanting to be creative without being a dream crusher. I want to be very supportive. I believe that our next great performers are out there. And there is definitely something in the Millburn water with the amount of talent, not only the students that I have coached from the area, but the actors that have come out of our community. If you do not feel passionate and love the arts, really take a long, hard look about the sacrifices that you might have to make in your career and in your personal life to pursue that path. You do it because you love it. If you can picture yourself doing anything else, you might want to explore that.
I think that's really good advice, like about like passion and doing what you really want to do. I think that's good advice, not only for acting, I feel like for everything else. And I think everyone who's listening to you will really appreciate that.
Isabella, when somebody says they want to be a doctor, they can take a path that is like, okay, I'll score really well in my math and science, and then I'll get into a college and I'll take the tracks that are pre-med, and then I'll score this amount on my MCATs. And then it's a very linear path. It is basically there in black and white. It's not subjective. You can be the best actress, and it's still subjective. And you just have to recognize that it is not a safe and sure bet, no matter how talented you are.
Avin, on that note, if you met someone who is like young and really wants to start voice acting, what would be like the biggest piece of advice that you would give them?
The biggest and most important piece of advice for anyone who wants to get into voice acting is to first take an acting class and a scene study class, and then take an improvisation class. After that, there are many online classes that they can take to kind of dip their toes into what voice acting covers. And then the other final piece of advice that I would give is to beware of scammers out there, because anybody with a website will proclaim themselves an expert. And just because they have the fanciest website, check their credits out before you decide to start coaching with someone. Are they legitimate? What's their background? Do they actually work? And then the other part to keep in mind is if you're voice acting, know your worth. The rates that I work under are all set at a minimum by the Screen Actors Guild, by the union, and by SAG-AFTRA. But a lot of young actors and a lot of creative professionals get sucked into the for experience or work for a lower rate. Know your worth. Don't undersell yourself. If you decide that your rate is what your rate is, be okay saying no thank you if they come back with an offer for a non-union job that you're not comfortable with.
Now that you're talking about like knowing your worth, what are your thoughts on AI and it like maybe beginning to replace some voice actors?
I have stepped away from a series that I worked on as they changed their contract to allow a path for them to use my voice in perpetuity. And we could not see eye to eye on that, and I walked away from it. I am very concerned that a new generation of human beings is learning about emotion from a robot. Why are we having children learn how to human from a non-human synthetic synthesized voice or likeness? It is terrifying, not only for my industry of a live human creative person, but for our humanity. And I feel very, very strongly that we need to take a pause and recognize that there are certain situations that we should not be automating and we should not be using AI for. Voice acting is definitely one of them. There has been a trend for books that read themselves, you can tell the difference. In a few years, maybe you can't. Who knows? But I would like to continue to work, and I would like to continue to tell stories, and I would like to continue to teach humans what a real emotion is, and have that creativity attached to it. I think it would be a disservice to humanity if we continue down the path where things became AI.
Well, thank you so much. I feel like that's like really like deep insight, because I understand that how it's like people grow up on things that you film, for example, Pokemon, and that it having it filmed by like a robot is really suiting for children, because it's, you know, it's almost like a celebration of human life, right? So I feel like it's better to have someone who's worked really hard on it to like really get it, get the job, you know. I think it's fair.
I have parents or young adults come up to me at conventions, and sometimes they use the words, "You were like my childhood." I would really hate for us to go down a path where somebody's just saying that to a computer box. "You were my childhood." That makes me very sad and very scared indeed. And if people are interested in speaking up, I know Scarlett Johansson is very involved working with our federal government to have protections put in place for unauthorized use of AI. And there are definitely avenues that listeners can find on the web to lend their signature and their voice to protect the usage, to protect people from having their voices used by AI. So that would be great if they wanted to check this out.
Yeah. Now to finish up, I remember like you just mentioned like, oh, you were in my childhood. Was there any like specific show or character that like really influenced you growing up that led you to this job?
I think having Paper Mill Playhouse in my backyard was really important. Seeing live theater, doing plays in Millburn really was a really special way to grow up, and feeling very supported by my community as I expressed myself creatively. Any shows that really inspired me growing up? I'm hard-pressed to think of specific TV shows or animated series. I mean, I watched probably stuff that's still around, The Simpsons, South Park, in terms of animated series, lots of shows on PBS, Sesame Street, even the puppetry work on that. But one of the reasons I knew I wanted to be a storyteller and voice acting is because when I read books, I see them come to life and I hear the characters and I can see when a book is written well, how it unlocks my imagination. And I, as a voice actor, am able to take that and translate it and actually bring it to life. And to me, that's been really inspiring. So I was a voracious reader. I'm still a voracious reader. I love storytelling. I know I've said it, but just any opportunity that I had to watch a good movie and then, you know, I just, when you can see it come to life in your brain, I get to bring that to people. And that's so special to me. So I definitely look back and see that my love of reading more necessarily than my love of the entertainment industry or what was on TV had an influence and impacted me.
So I'm glad that we're ending on this positive note. Thank you so much for being here. This was very fun, and I'm sure everyone who listens to us will appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. And to everybody out there in Millburn High School, you guys can find me at emilybauer.com. You can always go for a list of my conventions or appearances. And if anybody ever has any questions about voice acting, they can always reach out through my coaching website, which is actingwithemily.com.
Well, thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.